From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today on the phone I have as the seventh candidate for the third district seat on the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors to call into the hot seat, Bobby Shriver. How are you, Mr. Shriver? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into the hot seat.
Thanks very much. I'm great.
My pleasure. And this is a continuation of the Hot Seats Board of Supervisor Candidate Series, so I will be sticking to my election protocol. I have lots of questions for the candidates and not a lot of time, so without further ado, let's get started. Why do you want to be a member of the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors?
Because I got very involved in social issues when I was serving on the Santa Monica City Council, in particular homelessness and veterans homelessness. I think the county can do a much better job than they are now doing, not only in that area but in mental illness. The more I've studied it, the more I've seen they could do a much better job in transportation, in water management, so I felt that I could be very helpful to people on those issues. That's why I'm running.
So would you say you're running for the one issue or the main issue of homelessness slash mental health?
I wouldn't say I was running for any one issue, but I was personally very motivated by trying to bring the mental illness protocols of the county up to the 21st century. Yes, I think I'm very motivated by that. The child care matters is also a tremendously significant area. There are many, many very young children in foster care in Los Angeles County that right now are getting a very tough outcomes from the county. I want to see if that can be improved by consolidating various departments of the county that are now operating separately, making it very difficult, particularly for single-parent families, to access the system and know what their options are.
Okay. And why or how do you believe you know the 3rd District well enough to represent it on a very powerful governmental body?
Well, I've served in local government for... Hold on one second. I'm sorry. This is Elijah. I've served in local government for 8 years here in Santa Monica, and in doing that, I learned a lot about how cities work with the county. I've traveled all over the county in my 25 years I've lived in L.A., and I also think I have significant private sector and nonprofit experience that some of my opponents don't have that will enable me to do innovative things here, to get the jobs here, for example, to create private sector good-paying jobs. We've lost 200,000 jobs over the last 20 years, not as a result of the recession, but of various red tape, bureaucratic things that prevent job creation in the county. I want to see if I can do something about that. And I think people are very concerned about jobs, particularly in the northeast parts of the county, and rightly so. We're in a competitive world for jobs, and the government needs to do its part in making sure that the investors who are here creating jobs stay here and that we attract more jobs to this area.
And what are your ways of doing that?
Well, cutting needless red tape is the easiest one. I'll give you an example. The television show Baywatch, which employs, I think, about 100 people, moved to Miami, I'm told, by the people who worked on the show, because the county made the process of shooting here so difficult that they decided to move to Miami. So we lost those below-the-line jobs. That's unacceptable from my perspective. I think we need to protect those jobs, particularly in the creative industries in Los Angeles. This is a key industry for California and for Southern California. We just need to draw a line in the sand and make sure that these jobs stay here, and anything that the government can do to make sure that it doesn't make its process so cumbersome and overwhelming that people want to move, I think it should do, and I think it should do so on an expedited basis. We can't afford to lose these good-paying jobs.
Okay. And what is your current position, and or what did you do in the past that makes you qualified to sit on the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors?
Well, as I mentioned, I served on the Santa Monica City Council for 8 years, including a time as mayor there, so I've seen what cities do. There are 88 cities in Los Angeles County, and one of the most important things the county does is work in partnership with cities to get things done at the local level. So I've worked with the county myself as a city person, and I feel if I'm on the county government, I'll be able to work well with the other cities in my district and, for that matter, in the entire county. I've done other things in the private sector. I made a bunch of Christmas records called A Very Special Christmas, which raised $100 million for the Special Olympics, which my mom started. I've done things in international public health where I was able to get funding from the Republican administration in Washington for HIV in Africa. We started an organization called One, which is one.org, and another one called Red, the Red campaign, where we had Gap and American Express and Apple as partners. We make red-branded goods to raise money for HIV. Also, in that capacity. So I've had experience starting things up. I've been in local government. I've been in, you know, international and national public processes, and I hope that those are good preparation to try to work in the county.
Now, would you say you're qualified to deal with the mental health issue because of your time on the Santa Monica City Council?
Well, more broadly, I would say because of my time working in regional applications of the mental health system here. In other words, the vets who I was focused on weren't only living in Santa Monica. They were living in West L.A. They were living in Beverly Hills. They were even living in downtown L.A. on Skid Row. And the VA facilities in West L.A. weren't being responsive to them, in my judgment. So I spent a great deal of time traveling around on a regional basis to try to address that issue and understand why it was not being addressed. And I think many of the things facing us, transportation, water, these are not reserved to the boundaries of a city. These are regional issues, and they have to be addressed on a regional basis. And that's one of my primary motivators to go to the county, because the county is the regional authority. Even the city of L.A., as big as it is, can't fix the stormwater problem by itself. It needs cooperation from the county and from the other cities in the region, just as an example.
Okay. And you said what you've done in the past, but what is your current occupation?
Well, my current occupation since I got out of law school is to be a lawyer. So I've been a lawyer since I graduated from law school, and although I haven't practiced for specific clients, I have used my legal training to structure and build organizations. This minute, I'm running for office, so my full-time occupation now is candidate. I'm not engaging in any other office or work now.
Okay. And if 3rd District residents were to come up to you and ask why they should vote for you, what would you say?
I would say I'm a problem solver. This is a nonpartisan race. What people, I think, as I've been traveling around the district everywhere from Calabasas to Atwater Village, people want the problem solved. They're tired, I think, of people telling them what they're going to study it or have a commission report or have a meeting. They want someone who is going to solve the problem, and I think that my record shows that I've solved difficult problems that people said could not be solved. I give you an example. Under the Santa Monica Pier was the most polluted beach in the state. When I came into office, we were able to install a storm drain there and do various other things that took it off the list as the most polluted beach in the state and made it a swimmable beach. It's facing some challenges now, but it's a place where we did something that had not been done before. So I think I've had a record of doing things that haven't been done before. I'm nonpartisan. I try to work with the best people and attract the best people to jobs, and I want to be held accountable. So if somebody says to me, I'm voting for you because you're going to do something about this mental illness issue, when I come back to run for re-election in 4 years, I expect to see people, and my worst nightmare is to see somebody who says to me, you told me 4 years ago that you were going to do this and you didn't do it. So because that's my nightmare and I like to avoid my own nightmares, I'm going to make sure I do things that I say I'm going to do.
You say you're a problem solver. How will you solve problems within the county?
The same way I solve them within the city, the same way I solve them in Africa.
Which is what?
It's innovation. It's innovation. You have to try to think different, as Apple used to say. You can't expect to keep doing the same things in a similar way and expecting different outcomes. And that's another thing I'd say to the voters of the 3rd District. You know, if you want different outcomes than the ones you have gotten, vote for me. If you want things to sort of remain the same, you can vote for somebody else, because I'm a change agent. I want to do things differently. I find it challenging and fun to try to come up with a creative response to things. I'll give you an example.
We don't need examples just because in purposes of time, but a follow-up question for how do you plan to do that, though, if only 2 members of the County Board of Supervisors are up for re-election and you've still got 3 there?
Well, you need 3 votes to make a decision in the county, as I'm sure you know. So if you're one of the supervisors, that means you need to persuade 2 of your colleagues.
And how do you plan to do that?
Same way I've done it before. You know, you have to respect people, listen carefully to what it is that they want, try to find common ground. That's the essence of political life. You have to respect people and listen carefully to them and try to see where you can work together with them. I think I've shown a record of having done that well in the nonprofit world, in the government world, and in the private sector.
Okay.
So all I can do is refer people to bobbyshriver.com where they can see my record and make their own judgment.
Okay. And why should 3rd District residents trust you?
That's a good question. I think the answer lies in my record, what I've told people in the past, I really, 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 really tried hard to deliver on what I said I would do. I was brought up in a certain way that if you didn't do what you said you were going to do, you got a severe reprimand at the dinner table. And I learned my whole life to avoid saying I was going to do something and then not doing it, because my mom was not happy if that happened. So, people have to make their own judgment when they see people, when they listen to them, do they feel trustworthy? Trust your gut, as the old phrase goes. And, people have to make up their own decisions about that. It's a tough question. But I'll do my best, and I hope as I meet people around the 3rd District, and for that matter around the county, I hope that people, when they refer to their gut and listen to me, they think that guy looks like he's going to do the best he can and is trying to tell the truth. I'm not a career politician, so I didn't run until I was 50 years old. I'm just turned 60, so I would say a person who doesn't have a big stake in making up stories. I have a big stake in trying to deliver, be transparent and accountable to people on my career. Suggest that I've been able to do that in the past with a lot of hard work and a lot of great people on the team. I never feel that I did anything on my own. I always did things as part of an excellent team. So I hope that that's what will form up here, and I'll be able to deliver the results to the people who vote for me.
Okay. And you entered the race relatively late, I should say. And I feel like if I don't ask this question, I won't be doing my job properly. Did you do that? And are you relying on name appeal?
No, because I don't think that the voters ever have voted for someone based on name appeal. Honestly, I think LA is a very smart town, and I think that the media. You have the LA Daily News in the Valley, which is a very good newspaper. You have the LA Times. You have a million online bloggers and reporters, very good television news people out here. That the electorate in LA is smart. So I don't think, and I have a record. I'm, like I said, I'm 60 years old, so people can inform themselves very easily these days with the internet. They can inform themselves, you know, what has Bobby done? And do I think that what he's done has prepared him for this kind of work? And when he says he's going to do the following 6 things in 4 years, do I believe him? I mean, people are going to have to feel that they know the answers to those questions before they vote for me. They're not going to do it because, oh, yes, I recognize the name Shriver. I don't think people are like that. You know, I think people want to know themselves about you as an individual and what you've done. That's why I say BobbyShriver.com or my Facebook page. People can see stories there, and people can see people that I've worked with, not just political figures, but people in the public health world and HIV activists and other special education activists in Santa Monica who've worked with me. And, you know, you can message them and say, Shriver for real or not?
Okay.
And they'll tell you.
And you did mention that LA's people are smart, but the county is more, and your district's more than just the city of Los Angeles.
Well, sure, but people get the newspapers and get the media. Right, so 80% of my district is the city of L.A., but in the unincorporated areas in Topanga and the mountains, those people get the same media that the people in Beverly Hills or Santa Monica do. So I think they're just as smart as the city people.
Okay, I just wanted to get clarification on that.
Yeah.
And if you are elected, how will you work with the other elected officials whose districts lie within the 3rd district?
The same way I hope that the Zev Yaroslavsky, my predecessor, worked with us when I was in the city. I've seen that dynamic. I know how it works, unlike some of my competitors who have not been in that dynamic and who do not have direct experience with how it works. So I think respect is the most important idea when you go into a city council, whether it's in San Fernando or Beverly Hills. You have to respect the local elected officials. You have to listen to them about what their community does and doesn't want, and you have to try to see a way to be helpful to them. I view myself as working for them. They're closest to their constituents. I mean, my district is 2.1 million people. It's almost 2.5 times the size of a congressional district. So I don't kid myself that I'm going to be able to have a personal relationship with everybody in that district. But I know that the city council members and Calabasas know what's going on in Calabasas, and they know what's going on in West Hollywood and in Santa Monica. So I'm going to consult them and try to work closely with them and convey to them my respect for their office and my sincerity about trying to be helpful to them.
And you said that you'd work with the electeds just like Zev Yaroslavsky worked with you when you were an elected official. And being from that perspective, what was that?
How do you mean, what was it?
How did he work with you that you said you'd like to continue?
I think he came to the city frequently. He and his staff, his team, who are an excellent team, were in regular touch with the Santa Monica city staff. So, for example, the people who worked on homelessness or even on education on Zev's team.
We don't need examples, just in the interest of time.
Okay. But that's how.
Okay. And continuing on now, there will be a new first district supervisor, a new sheriff, and a new assessor. How will you work with your colleagues on the Board of Supervisors to do what is best for your constituents and the county as a whole?
I would say the same thing that I've just said, which is I want to respect whoever wins those offices. I want to try to work with them to make sure they deliver services to the people and that they do so in a transparent, modern way.
Okay. And how will you work with the new sheriff to reform the department and ensure it does not continue to go downhill?
Well, first thing I'm going to do is listen to the ideas of the sheriff, who's the independently elected person based on his or her ideas. But I'm going to have a tough perspective on that, since I think that the department has been, in a tremendous tailspin recently. There are a lot of good cops in there who deserve a lot of credit for hanging tough in this environment. But there needs to be culture change, as everybody who's running for office has said. So I want to be able to support that in a disciplined and, again, transparent and open to the public way. That's the reason I support the Civilian Oversight Commission. I think it's very important to have the public involved closely in the management of that department.
Okay. And how will you work with the new assessor to ensure properties are assessed fairly, integrity returns to the office, and what happened under the current assessor does not happen again?
Well, you have to put the right safeguards in place, and I would support them. And again, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I think respect for whoever's elected is the number one thing, and listening to them and trying to see how they plan to go about it. I don't like to micromanage people who are good. One of the most important things the supervisor do, and for that matter the city councils do, is to hire their staff. If you've made good hires, you don't need to do a lot of micromanaging. If you don't have good hires, then you've got a problem. And I hope that, and I trust that the voters will elect a great person as the assessor. And assuming that that's the case, I will try to be supportive of that person.
And you said that you'd like to see or to make sure there are safeguards in place. What safeguards would you like to put into place in terms of the assessor's office?
An internal audit is always a smart idea. I always, in things that I run, try to have multiple signatures from different people who are not, beholden to other people on decisions. So checks and balances are very important. So I would look to the elected person to explain to me how the oversight and checks and balances system is going to work to prevent malfeasance in there. I have a lot of confidence in the rank and file employees of that department. The bad stuff that was happening there was allegedly brought on by the leadership. So I don't like to blame the staff. The leadership is being blamed, and apparently rightly so. So I'm hopeful that the new person will be a person of tremendous integrity, and I look forward to supporting them.
Okay. And what will you do to help the assessor modernize the office?
I assume that the assessor will come in with their own plans for that, and I look forward to financing them and putting the money against it, assuming that the plans are great and my colleagues on the board agree with me. That's our role. Our role is not to tell the newly elected person what they should do. No doubt that person will have thought that up themselves. If they come in and tell us, a bunch of wacky ideas, then our role is to say, that doesn't seem right to us.
So if the assessor was to come before you and ask the board for additional money for upgrading the technology in the office, would you vote for that?
It depends on what how the request is framed. Just like in any investment request, if I say to you, you want to buy, Microsoft stock at 30, you have or do you want to buy it at 10?
Okay.
You have to see what the request, how it's framed, and what is exactly. So it's a possible question to answer as you framed it. It's clearly the department needs modernization, but we have to see exactly what it is. I'm not going to give anybody a blind open checkbook, but I'm looking forward to modernizing that department.
Okay.
It's a very important aspect of county government.
Okay. And the moving on now to the Sheriff's Department specifically, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department has had lots of problems in the last year. And you've said this before, but just to have it on the record when I ask the question, do you support a Citizens Oversight Commission for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department?
Yes.
Okay. And will you bring this up for a vote, and what authority would you want this commission to have?
Sure, I'll bring it up for a vote if somebody else doesn't bring it up for a vote. And as to the authority, I think they should have full authority to request all information from the sheriff, to hold hearings, invite the public, bring issues forward, and put the sunlight on the department. And I think the new sheriff will welcome this. People who are smart always want sunshine on matters. I never met a smart manager in the public sector or the private sector who was trying to hide stuff.
And
so I'm hopeful that the new sheriff will fully support it and propose ways that it can do its job as effectively as possible.
Would you want the recommendations of the commission to be binding?
How do you mean?
Well, if they suggest something to the sheriff, do you want the sheriff to be mandated, or do you want to?
Well, they don't have, as you know, right now, the board itself doesn't have the authority to mandate the sheriff to do something. That under state law, the sheriff
yes.
has his or her own authority, so it's impossible for the Citizens Oversight Commission to have mandating authority anymore. The board can't give that person any more authority than the board itself has.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes. And would you support a new jail facility?
I've said publicly no, to the extent that it includes mentally ill people. I'm strongly in favor of what's called diversion, which means treating mentally ill people not in a jail situation, but in a mental health situation. So, no. I mean, clearly the jail needs to be replaced. It's a very old building, so I do support a new jail for violent criminals, absolutely, 1,000%. But I do not support putting mentally ill people into jail.
Where do you suggest, where would you
that
like
they
to
go,
see them?
That they go, as they do around elsewhere in the country, to mental health diversion programs. If they're dangerous people, of course, they need to go to a lockdown, particularly if they're dangerous to themselves. But many, many people can be treated in a mental health context in the community. We've learned a great deal about mental illness in our country and in the medical field over the last 30 years, and jailing such people is just not right. So, and it doesn't lead to good outcomes for the people or for society, and it's extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more expensive than jailing people, whereas giving people treatment in the community and or in centralized facilities that are for psychiatric treatment as opposed to for jailing is a much, much better idea and much cheaper.
So to be clear, though, you'd support a new jail facility to replace the existing one, but not to add capacity?
Well, not exactly. I support a new jail facility for whatever is required to jail hardened criminals. I believe the estimates show that it would decrease the capacity, since the numbers now suggest that as many as a third of the current inmates, many of whom are awaiting trial, the mentally ill people, are in the capacity figures as currently stated. But the even bigger idea than that is that whoever studies this should be a person or a company with a mental illness background. The person who studied it and recommend the capacity now has been, as I understand it, a jail construction firm. So they have not hired an independent company to assess it from a mental illness point of view, and I would push for that.
Okay. And continuing on now, there are some identifying features of the district, such as the beach and some iconic cities like Beverly Hills. What will you do to make sure that these iconic places are not destroyed or taken advantage of by corporations or government agencies?
I'm sorry, I don't really understand the question. How could they be taken advantage of by corporations or government agencies?
Well, that's part of what I left the question broad intentionally, so that way the candidate could take it in any direction they choose. But in terms of if, say, a corporation wanted to do something that would destroy the landscape or that would destroy the feel of it, which makes it iconic, such as something to do with the beach.
You mean, for example, were there oil drilling on the beach kind of thing?
Well, that's one way of taking the question, and like I said, I left
yeah.
these broad intentionally.
Well, I to the extent it matters, you know, in city government, I tended to vote against large new developments that impacted the environment of Santa Monica. But those kinds of land use questions really are governed by, in our system, are governed by cities, not by the county. So I don't quite know.
Well, then what about for Marina Del Rey?
Excuse me? In the unincorporated areas of the county, the Marina is not in this district, but in the unincorporated areas of the county and in my district, like Topanga or the Mountain, I fully support the local coastal program plans that Zev did a brilliant job in implementing and getting, I now hope, passed. So I think that's a very, very good new process for governing land use matters in those unincorporated areas.
Okay. And there are also diverse populations, including large homeless and veteran populations. What will you do to help these people achieve better lives in the 3rd District, and what will you do to provide resources to help and support them?
Well, as I said at the beginning of our conversation, I've worked on the homeless veterans matters beginning in 2004 when I was first elected in Santa Monica, and I must say I was elected there in a landslide because I talked a lot about the veterans and homelessness issues in my campaign. People really want that issue solved. Other cities in the United States have solved it by building housing. There's no reason why in Los Angeles we can't build the housing necessary to house people who have served in the 2 wars we've been fighting for the last 10 years. It's just unacceptable, and whether they're built on the VA property in Westwood or at Sepulveda or in Long Beach, by the way, Long Beach is doing a very good job of this, the housing just needs to be built. So that's how I try to do it. And the housing with services in the housing, so they call it supportive services. People who are in this housing who are suffering perhaps from PTSD or other mental illnesses or drug addiction or alcoholism, they need to be treated in the building. And this has been shown to work, in many other cities in the United States. We just haven't done it quickly in Los Angeles.
And do you plan to do that through the county alone, or do you plan to have a public-private partnership?
Plan to have a partnership with the cities.
Okay.
So we have, as 88 cities in the county. So those cities need to buy into a program. And to the extent the private sector can be brought in to work on it, I think that's great. That has been very successful in other cities in the United States where private sector expertise has been helpful. So I'm very, very excited about coming up with a plan that many people will buy into for that purpose. The big idea is to get the goal out there. So for the community, as part of the election, and that's why the election and the campaign is very, very important, and media efforts like yours is important, which is to get the idea out that this issue can be solved. It has been solved in other cities. The reason it has not been solved in Los Angeles is because, in the first instance, we have not built the housing. We need to build the housing, and the county needs to put the supportive health care services into the housing.
Okay.
And that's just the bottom line.
Okay. And what will you do about mental health treatment in the County of Los Angeles to ensure there is a greater and equal access to care?
One of the great ideas, which is not mine but is out there and I fully support, is to locate some mental health care professionals on school property. So in middle schools and or in high schools, in all the school districts of our region, that there's some access to mental health care in the school seems to me to be a very, very positive idea. Locating the services only in mental health care clinics and causing people who have challenges to get in their car or ride on transit to get to the services seems to me to be the wrong idea. We should bring the services to the people where the people are so they have access on a day-to-day informal basis, and we don't make parents take their kids to mental health care clinics.
Okay. And as I previously mentioned, the Board of Supervisors is one of the most powerful governmental bodies. Do you support an increase in the number of seats on the County Board of Supervisors?
Yes.
How many seats would you like to add?
I don't know without studying the detailed demographic information, but it's clearly impossible for a single official to represent 2 million people. My competitor has disagreed with me on this, and she has said that it's a matter of staffing. And I've disagreed with her on that. I think people want to see the actual elected official, and therefore I see it as impossible to see 2 million people.
Okay, and moving on to Metro now. As a Los Angeles County Supervisor, you get to sit on the Metro Board of Directors. So currently there are 2 contested projects, one the Green Line and the other the Purple Line. The Green Line is under heavy criticism because it does not extend all the way to the airport, and there are no plans, at least at the present time, to bring it into the airport. What is your position about this issue?
It's got to go to the airport.
How do you plan to get it there?
By following the alternative plan to get it there.
What is that plan?
That's it's up online. It has to go in just like it does in London, Singapore, everywhere else, to go in and go into the new terminal to put people through the TSA and the bag check function there, and then for them to get on the people mover and go to their gate.
Okay. And the Purple Line is under the microscope because it is currently slated to run underneath Beverly Hills High School, which is controversial because of the oil wells underneath it. There is a less expensive alternative running it north under Santa Monica Boulevard. Which Purple Line alignment do you support, the northern alignment under Santa Monica Boulevard or the southern alignment under Beverly Hills High School?
Well, I think you've misstated the facts there. As I understand the facts, it's not necessarily less expensive or more expensive. It really has to do with the question of the risk of the line in an earthquake. Not an expense issue, as I understand it. And that issue, you know, needs to be fully studied and decided in public. So I'm totally 1,000% for what's safe, and I'm 1,000% against what's unsafe.
Okay. And the cost is not the issue. I just was stating the cost figure in there. And last question, yes,
well, just so you know, that's a debated figure, and you stated it as though it was an assumed figure. People have disagreed, let me put it that way, as to whether or not it's cheaper or not.
Okay. And last question, yes or no, do you believe more work needs to be done on the 405?
More? You mean, well, of course, I think the work needs to be completed. So
well,
yes,
in addition to that?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, and thank you very much for joining me in the hot seat today, Mr. Schreiber. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Great job. All the best to you.
Thank you. The Hot Seat After Hours starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat newsletter by clicking the link on our page. Go to annenbergradio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat description and enter your email address. This is the last installment of any of my candidate series, at least for the present time, or at least for the primary season. I hope you found all of the candidate interviews informative. Thank you for listening, and thank you for listening to The Hot Seat for the semester and for the entire first year. This was the final show of the spring, but The Hot Seat will be back next semester with lots of great guests. It will be an extra special season because it will be during the peak of election campaigning. I will be available all summer on Twitter, and I will be checking the Hot Seat inbox. Please remember to vote in the California primary on June 3rd. I'd like to thank everybody who has made this podcast possible all year. On the Annenberg Radio side, Willis Seidenberg, Karen Lowe, Joel Zink, and Katie Davis. On the Neon Tommy side, Alan Middlestadt, Mark Cooper, Brianna Sachs, Hannah Maddins, and Sarah Newman. Have a great summer. I hope you will join me in the fall when I will be broadcasting from the new Wallace Annenberg Hall, and I want to remind everybody that Neon Tommy will still be publishing new content over the summer. Good day.